And may I do the chant opening? Is that okay? And unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good evening, everyone. Can people hear me okay? No? I have a kind of more primitive setup here, so I have to wear a headset. As though I were a helicopter pilot, so please put up with me. Also, it was, I can't quite see all of you for some reason, even though I have a pretty big screen. A couple of people, I think, are off to one side, but I can almost see all of you. And I confess, during Zazen, it was fun sneaking a peek at those of you who stayed on camera during Zazen. Everyone looked very peaceful, and I hope you were. I hope you weren't trying to be peaceful, because I don't know about you guys, but that doesn't generally work very well. It's not for me. I'm pretty inclined to be seasick, so I tend to avoid boats. And that's people who pretend to be seasick or rather people who have migraines, as I do, also tend to get seasick. So those two are kind of related somehow. And I was complaining to Jim that I've been reasonably well for the past 10 days, and then this afternoon I started to develop another migraine just in time for you guys. And last month, I guess it was, I was supposed to visit with you, and I was felled by a bad attack. So I decided I would not let that happen this time. So far, things are cooperating. But it was, Dora Lee was thanking me for coming to see you, but it's so easy to come and see you this way. And in some respects, it's actually working out quite well. My teacher, Tenshin Anderson, has a seminar for his senior students. And it's at Green Gulch Farm, and I don't have a car, so sometimes I can't get out there. But I have not missed one yet for some weeks, because all we have to do is turn on the computer and this marvelous apparatus, Zoom, or I guess that's what we're using. Yeah, looks like that's what we're using. Makes it so easy, you know, for us to at least enter a space, a virtual space together. And we call it a virtual space, but it actually reflects our genuine connection, which persists because of our what do they call it? Our quantum entanglement. We're all entangled with one another in a way that is not affected by how far apart we get in this universe. And that is, to me, that's a great source of peace. During Zazen, when I wasn't horsing around and looking at your pictures, I was just sitting here and listening to the evening bird song from the back garden here, and was remembering one of Dogen's poems that came up in our study session. And it's very short. I'll just read it to you. And I wanted to read it because it is so much a poem of Zazen. It goes, cattails sitting tall, silently swaying. Dragons singing as clouds gather. No longer counting the number of breaths. 3,000 realms are gathered in the sacred sea. So this poem springs from the heart of Zazen. And I think even just a little bit quiet and a little bit recollected, we can sense how such a poem touches us there, meets us there. The deep places, the deepest place in ourselves where we all meet and where we can't be separated from one another. So this is a deep a consolation and a joy while some other stuff is going on, you know, in our lives, and we are confronting a kind of circumstance that most of us are very strange to. We have not. My own personal memory goes back to when I was very small, and there was a polio epidemic at the time. And I don't remember very much, but I remember that for at least one summer, we could not go to the swimming pool. And maybe, well, I don't know if I was going to movies much in those days, but many of those gathering places, and for some reason, especially the swimming pool, was closed to us. But since then, nothing else has come close to this very, very strange atmosphere where I'm reminded of some of St. Paul's letters, where he says something about, you know, the enemy is roaming like a ravenous lion outside somewhere, waiting to snatch someone. And he was speaking of the devil, supposedly, but it's sort of like that. There's sort of a critter out there somewhere who will snatch the unwary, or maybe even the wary. And this, of course, is really putting a very sharp point on the sense of our human situation. Which, you know, Suzuki Roshi likens to, as I like to remind myself and others, getting into a boat, sailing out into the middle of the ocean, and sinking. Yeah, that's about right. That's about what our situation is like. Today I was looking at a YouTube video of a very young seeming Theravadan monastic, a Westerner, and he was giving a very brief synopsis of Buddha's teaching. And of course, he started with the Four Noble Truths and the way they had it printed on the screen was life involves suffering. That's okay. Suffering, I guess, is the most common translation for the Sanskrit dukkha or Pali dukkha. It's not quite right, as I think probably most of you who have been studying a while are aware. What comes much closer, I think, is the German word Angst. You've probably come across that word. Angst, which is translated as something like, I don't know, existential dread, The only problem with suffering is in our vocabulary, sometimes it's easy to let that word sort of blend imperceptibly into, for instance, pain. And of course, pain and suffering are quite different. And pain and dukkha are very different. Whereas angst, this sense that I think one of the Grimm's fairy tales features there's a town and there's a big tree in the central square, and the tree is this very, very nice tree, but it starts to look kind of sick, and it looks sick because there's a rat way down in the roots chewing away. And sometimes our human situation is as though there's this kind of wonderful, expansive tree, but there's something a little wrong. There's a rat gnawing at the roots. And the sense of something being a little bit off is sometimes very strong, and sometimes so weak we can't really see it. We're not really aware of it. And I don't know about you, but when I'm not really aware of it, I'm quite happy just to skate along and forget that the surface appearance is not quite sufficient for students of Dharma. But just to arrange things so that we're reasonably comfortable and happy and so forth, if we can. And that just takes care of everything. But actually, it doesn't quite. So we have this sense of angst that is intimately connected with the sense that we have kind of the flip side of that, which is the idea that the conditions that produce angst are identically the conditions that create a doorway into freedom. So the first noble truth, as you know, has three others in company, and they are all intimately tied together. So the presence, the existence of angst is inseparable from the fact that there is a path away from angst, away from bondage, away from the sense that to rely on another old etymology of the word dukkha, probably heard, one part of that term refers to the hub of a wheel, and the other part refers to the hub being somewhat damaged. Right? So the wheel cannot turn perfectly smoothly, but instead it kind of lumps along and creates a bearable ride for the passengers, but it's not perfectly smooth. And another meaning is that the syllable ka can refer to the sky, and dukkha can refer to a sky that will not rain. So a drought. And these are all kind of evocative, have an evocative sense of our human situation. And it's been brought to, as I say, a kind of a sharp point by what's been going on. So we are all quite blessed to have a practice that calls us again and again to the place where we are all in touch with one another permanently. And where living according to Buddha's teaching helps address the deep underpinnings of dukkha, which of course is that things don't look like we are in touch with one another. They look like we're separate. They look like the universe is something from which each of us, any of us, could be subtracted and it will make no difference. And that is not right. Late Reverend Katagiri Dainen Roshi put it quite strikingly the other way, kind of turned that delusion over and said, no, the universe is born with you and dies with you, which is an extraordinary statement and actually quite true, but not the usual way we think of things. So I don't know. It looks like you're all at home because you're supposed to be. I'm very familiar with these four walls that are enclosing me. You see my altar in the background there. I have my mosquito net over here to defeat the little bloodsuckers. And this looks like, in my camera, this looks like a bed, but it's not. It's just a blanket covering mess that I don't want people to see. So I live amidst this clutter, which has now become very familiar. I have not seen my brother in weeks and weeks. I haven't seen my few friends in weeks and weeks. And I haven't seen our Sangha except in this way for weeks and weeks. And I'm ready for it to change, and I'm also noticing how ready I am for it to change. And how, when I allow that frame of mind to kind of dominate, I'm kind of missing an opportunity to be still in the midst of a situation that is showing us our human situation in a way that we can't really escape from. And for students of Dharma, that's actually very, very helpful. Fortunately, and for the time being, I'm okay. Reasonably healthy, except for my usual troubles. I hope all of you are doing okay. I do find myself from time to time wondering when the lion will pounce. You know, is the lion going to pounce? And I'm at an age where if the lion pounces on me, he just might carry me off. So I try to have a healthy awareness of that. I'm quite drawn to sample the richness of video that is available nowadays. I have three or four different video services I can turn to anytime I want. There is a tremendous amount of stuff out there. And most of it's junk, but not all of it. And I heard somebody, maybe it was Jim, mention Jay Garfield. The other day, somebody pointed me to his series of talks that he gave by video presentation, initially to the monastics at Shravasti Abbey here in California. A women's Tibetan Buddhist community, and there are about 24 hours in 90 or 120 minute chunks where he is discussing Yogacara and Madhyamaka Buddhism, which are a kind of the pinnacles of the development of Buddhist philosophy over the last a couple of millennia. And he does, I must say, an excellent job of explaining. And there are long sections of answering questions that are also quite illuminating. So if anyone's interested, you can just go on YouTube, and if you just look for Jay Garfield, I forget the exact title, something like, I don't know, something like Mind and Its Owner, or something like that. I'm kind of, at this moment anyway, planning on watching them all. And if people feel like doing that, or even watching some of it, it will be a substantial education in Buddhist philosophy. And even though our lineage is Zen, there's no harm at all for us in studying some of these, the more intellectual road, which for us can be dynamically balanced by our practice of Zazen. And in the process of this presentation that Jay Garfield, touches on a lot of very basic and important Buddhist philosophical concepts, which you might enjoy hearing about. He does point out, and it's very obvious within a few minutes, he is a philosopher. He is quite schooled in, particularly in Western philosophy, but also in Tibetan Buddhism. He's been studying with Gelugpa teachers, one kind or another, for 3 decades. So he's quite conversant with that. And I was watching his presentation today, and I was felt a little downhearted, because I could tell, you know, he's a philosopher and I'm not. I am not a philosopher. I am if anything at all, and I sometimes wonder, but if I'm anything at all, I'm a contemplative and a monastic. And I am not drawn to, I'm not drawn to vigorous investigations of the mind road. I'm happy to listen to someone else investigate, but I just don't feel like I had a year of fairly rigorously taught Western philosophy in high school, and that was actually enough. And I had some trouble getting through that class because it was so hard for me to feel the bodily connection, if you like, with these kind of dizzying edifices of intellectual thought. And some Buddhists have produced also some very beautiful edifices of intellectual thought. And for the Tibetans, and particularly the Gelugpas, that kind of training is an important, you might say, underpinning, particularly for their later training in Tantra. And without that, without the foundation of solid intellectual study, the practice of Tantra can cause difficulties of one kind or another. So for them, it's quite helpful. And for us, to a degree, Zen embodies the teaching of the perfection of wisdom, which is to say the emptiness teachings. And very often, a Chan or Zen is thought of as it's kind of a wisdom teaching. No. And those of you who are here tonight, maybe you have all practiced enough to have noticed that, well, that's not all it is. It's true that we kind of approach the teaching that way, but that's not all it is. And our practice of compassion and our practice of being able to enter and talk about the teaching verbally and intellectually is also important. So we don't just set all that aside and ignore it. For us to have some grounding in the verbal, intellectual side can also be quite helpful. So, especially since this is free and endlessly available, you might want to check it out. And it is one of hundreds or probably thousands of videos of various presentations of Buddha Dharma. I've mentioned before what a fan I am of Robert Thurman, who's another person who has many, many videos, and who is a great master of Buddha Dharma and expresses and explains things very, very well. It's quite helpful. So if you're sitting around at home, give me one sec. My brother's calling. Hi there. Hi, I have to call you back. I'm talking to Sacramento.
Okay,
I'll call back. All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Okay. Sorry. That's one person I always take calls from. So, where was I? Oh, nowhere, as usual. I have here... because we were talking about since many of us, most of us, have a lot of time on our hands, some extra Dharma study is this perfect opportunity, and that can also include additional practices of chanting and making offerings. And if anyone is interested, you can get yourselves one of these. Is that backwards? Oh dear. Well, it looks backwards on my screen. Anyway, it's supposed to say, Soto School Scriptures for Daily Services and Practice. And this is quite lovely. One of these accordion books. And this is made available by Soto Zen North America office, and you can just look them up online. And this thing is it's not cheap, unfortunately. I think it's about $30, but it's quite a beautiful cover, very, very nice fabric cover. It comes in its own little sleeve, and you can use it to create your own service for morning service or evening service. It's full of chants. Both in English and Chinese and Japanese, and you can use those in any way you like. You don't have to follow a particular rota or schedule or calendar of services. You can do as you please. And since we have time, morning is a great time if you have a home altar to light a candle, and then I make an offering of a little bowl of water. And you've seen these offerings being made. Pour the water in the bowl and raise it just above your eyes, and then place it on the altar in front of the figure. And you can accompany that with a chant if you like. Somebody online was making inquiries about a chant that we include in our chant book. I don't know if it's in the Valley Streams chant book. It's Dogen's verse on awakening the vow, Hiehe Koso Hotsu Ganmon. Is that one of ours? That's a lovely thing to chant as maybe something you chant in the morning as you make this offering of water. And of course, if you light a candle, that's an offering of light. And incense is an offering of fragrance. And you can put a flower on your altar. These are all ways of inviting forth the mind and heart of practice in a way that is buoyed up and nourished by our zazen, our sitting in stillness, our sitting in peace. And as you know, our teaching allows us to experience how peace arises in and of itself without our having to do anything deliberate about it. And, I mentioned my tendency to be seasick, but when I'm sitting, this sense of simply going along with the waves is something that I think all of us, anyone who is not, you know, badly injured or ill, can simply allow to fill the whole body mind without trying to like stop thoughts or worry about whether our insight is improving or anything along those lines. Just to give ourselves wholeheartedly to the experience of sitting in stillness is a complete practice, and one to which our many ancestors have generously invited us. It's always accessible. I don't know if there was anything else of significance I was going to say this evening. Oh, look, there's a cat. I especially love these Zoom events that are photobombed by cats, dogs, and I think Brett had a small being there with him at some point. And this really alivens up the atmosphere. Unfortunately, our animals are not in my room at the moment, otherwise I'd invite them to join us. We take the liberty of allowing animals in the Zendo, so occasionally we'll have, before the eruption of the troubles, we often have one or two dogs in there quietly snoring away as we did our zazen, which I quite like, actually. So, I don't know, I'm happy to take questions.
Yes, for those who want to speak or ask a question, if you could just raise your hand and then unmute yourself. And I think Larry raised his hand. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, sorry.
So, yeah, you can just wave at the camera, I guess. And yeah. I don't know, is the engineer unmuting people or are we unmuting ourselves?
We're unmuting ourselves.
Okay. I have my hand up.
So okay. Didn't see you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go on, Don.
Well, I really, I want to ask you or just encourage you with your great, studies in Sanskrit. It would be really, it's really fun to hear your etymologies of like a word like dukkha, such an important word. And I don't know, this is not necessarily for tonight, but I would love to hear you, kind of do that treatment of all four noble truths or any other terms that, speak to our practice. Because it's quite revealing, really. You know, a sky that doesn't rain, or the idea that suffering is kind of. Like the angst is a better substitute word or translation. Those kinds of insights which really can only come from someone who studied the language are really really helpful, I think.
Yeah, and today's video, Jay Garfield was emphasizing that himself, and I was kind of embarrassed thinking back to our study hour here a few months ago. We were studying the Lankavatara Sutra, and I happened to have a Sanskrit copy, which I could refer to, but Garfield has plumbed those depths much more deeply than I, And I just felt like, oh, my presentation was so pallid compared to what he is able to discourse about, since he also knows Tibetan, which I do not. So I must try not to let my feeling sheepish keep me from presenting at least what I can present, which is some stuff.
Yeah,
so I would be happy to do that, and especially if people have questions or there are particular things that they want to examine, I can always give that a try, and I could do some stuff. But alas, not being a philosopher, but being a contemplative, my initial response is always silence, which isn't necessarily what people want. Sometimes the words, at this point, quite profoundly developed Buddhist vocabulary in Sanskrit and Tibetan and so forth can actually draw from the silence some sorts of nourishment and encouragement and so forth that's quite useful. So I will do my best not to neglect that. And as I say, I'm happy to take requests up to a point. I'm given what I can manage.
You might also like to know that thanks to inner sangha communication and the presence of Susan Farrar in our sangha, several of us became aware of the Jay Garfield teachings as they were going to be presented, and both Susan and myself were in the entire 30-hour presentation. And I know Larry is going to watch it on YouTube. It's all been recorded. It was a big commitment you're saying, it's one of the, it's pretty easy to clear your calendar.
Yes.
Right now.
Yeah.
And I never would have been able to make such a commitment feel that I could in normal times, but it was really well worth the effort, and I took extensive notes on it.
Were you there in real time, or did you catch the recordings?
I was on Zoom, which was real time.
Wow.
with the Abbey.
Oh, excellent. I wish I'd done that. But now the recordings are there, quote, forever and available for all. So, as a free offering, it's quite extraordinary, really, to have access to that much teaching and not even having to pay for it except for your, internet connection.
Are encouraged to keep it going.
Yeah, he said quite a few, just in one, in a couple hours, he said quite a few interesting things. Early on, he said something like, now I know some people may not be familiar with these terms like Madhyamaka and Yogacara. Those are just philosophical trends in Buddhism that were and still are important. And he said, he quoted a Tibetan authority who had said that both these philosophical trends, Madhyamaka and Yogacara, both of them naturally address emptiness, because that is the pinnacle of Buddhist teaching. However, Madhyamaka addresses emptiness from the point of view of the object, and Yogacara addresses emptiness from the point of view of the subject. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, I thought, I wish I'd said that. I wish I had that thought. But I did not. So, but he did, and many other very, very worthwhile thoughts besides that can help clear away some of the dense undergrowth and get to what's really significant about the upwelling of Buddhist philosophy over so many centuries. So I quite recommend it.
So that sounds like maybe your next Dharma talk, because Simone put in the chat, emptiness would be a great word to dissect in its various iterations.
Okay. Well, again, I can always make a stab at it. And one thing about our Chan or Zen tradition, and so far anyway, I haven't heard Jay Garfield disparage us at all. Even though occasionally we get disparaged, but the over the course of so many centuries, the movements back and forth and in and out of trends in Buddhist philosophy have created quite an enormous corpus for study. And in terms of Chan and Zen, one of our great gifts that we have to offer is we are able to blunt the tendency to miss the forest because of the trees. Because there are so many trees and so many kinds, and they have so many branches, and they're so fascinating that sometimes it's possible to forget that there's an actual forest there. And the practice of Zen is kind of a practice of the whole forest. And as you may know, one of the expressions used to refer to a Zen meditation hall is a forest. A forest of silently, deeply planted trees. Our point of view is more of the whole forest. And so for us to be told about, well, there's that kind of tree and that kind of tree, and that one is grown over there, and this one looks like this with these leaves, can actually be quite helpful for us. And we can always take, as it were, refuge in the whole forest rather than the trees. So that's a strength that we have.
Mio, could you say the poem again that you read at the beginning, by Dokken?
Yes. This is, I think, appears in the Eihei Koroku, Dogen's collection of his many Dharma talks that he gave at Koshyoji and Eiji. In this particular poem goes, cattails sitting tall, silently swaying, dragons singing as clouds gather, no longer counting the number of breaths, 3,000 realms are gathered in the sacred sea. Lovely poem. Zazen poem.
Sort of a condensation of a philosophy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's say a Zen snapshot of the whole forest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sarah, is that you waving?
Yes, Mio, it is me. Thank you so much. I wanted to go back to your translation of dukkha, angst.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've been sitting with, and I'm struggling with, is that without dukkha, without angst, there's no nirvana. There's no difference between the two. And I keep flipping back and forth between rage. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to go through this? And they're still the same. I keep flipping that in my head, and I don't know it's very unsettling. I'm finding it very unsettling. And sitting zazen is the one place where I get some relief from that. And I don't want, relief is not the right word, but
mm-hmm.
where I don't feel so disoriented.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, maybe, and that's part of this, the emptiness, the sunyata, that are, well, I don't know if I'm saying it correctly.
Yeah.
But could you talk a little, or just give me some words about that would maybe make me more stable?
Well, first of all, let me make sure I understand. Which two things are you talking about?
Dukkha and enlightenment and nirvana, the two.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Those two, it's like going through the angst, the dukkha is required. You have to experience that. And it's part of experiencing enlightenment or nirvana, that they're not different. And I just, that that's unsettling. It's very unsettling to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is another topic that could easily have 24 hours spent on it, nonstop talking and digging. So we don't really have time for that. But
maybe another Dharma talk.
Well, yeah, sure. But the, how do I say, the fact that, let's say samsara and nirvana are not separate, that is to say, are not disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
That, when that becomes an actual realization, that is the end of angst. Okay, now does that sound familiar to you? Like you've heard
it does.
That before?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so that's just a slightly different statement of what you were saying.
Right.
And
right.
Zazen embodies that.
Right.
Even though, you know, each of us will have our own diary of practice and verification or realization over a lifetime of practice, and we may feel like, well, it would be nice if my realization of the dynamic that joins samsara and nirvana, be nice if my realization were broader and deeper. But, I think for the time being, I can go with and trust how my practice is right now. And doing so will help my body mind settle into the truth of how those two, like nirvana, is not some other place that we have to get to where we will leave. We'll leave all dukkha behind and we'll be in this nice place called nirvana. That's not it at all. Nirvana is where we are now. And the realization of that is the end of angst. And of course, the more we practice, the deeper our practice goes, the more that realization becomes a reality.
But we're also here in samsara.
Yes,
now.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. There's no place else to be, actually.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the things that's come up for me in my practice in this time of great suffering in the world.
Yeah.
It's both here at the same time.
Yes.
And that actually, as painful as it is, it gives me great, I don't want to say hope because it's here. It's not hope for something else.
How about trust?
Maybe that's a better word. Thank you.
It is for me. It gives me great trust, right? Trust in Buddha's teaching, a trust that Buddha's fundamental insight was shatteringly accurate.
Yeah.
And that our practice is based on and rooted in that, and therefore tremendously trustworthy.
Thank you. That's exactly the word I needed. Thank you.
Something like that. Is that Larry with a hand up?
Yes. Reverend Mio, I want to try another word for suffering and see what your impressions are. Another teacher has mentioned this as a way that he tends to think of that word, and he uses the word discontent.
Discontent, yeah. For dukkha?
Yeah.
Yeah, discontent, as long as it's recognized on a very deep level. You know, this is existential discontent, not just, I don't like my bagel or my coffee's too cold. this is like down there in the roots where the rat is gnawing.
Oh.
Another translation is unease. There's a deep unease that can only be satisfied when our misknowledge, our wrong view is eradicated.
Okay, I may have been clinging to the more shallow, or maybe view of it. I mean, for instance, I've said, you know, I even had a way-seeking mind talk that I gave to the Sangha, and I said, well, I don't really feel like I'm suffering. And then after listening to the word discontent, I realized, you know, I have moments where I'm sitting, I'm sitting and I just have this feeling like I'm not comfortable being where I am right now. I don't know what else it is that I want, but there's something. I wish I wasn't exactly here right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the shallow or the existential type now, but
well, I don't either. But that feeling of I don't quite like where I am right now goes very deep. Mm. And finally, its deepest roots are what we call dukkha,
mm.
or unease, or mistrust, or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's right down there where our identity as sentient being and Buddha is rooted.
Mm.
And as I say over and over again, our practice embodies the way things actually are, which is no separation.
Mm.
And this is the therapy that we return to over and over again, and that Dogen called practice verification, mm. practice realization. Mm. And he very wisely presented as two Chinese characters side by side, right? Not separated by some long explanation. They are side by side. They are one thing, one dynamism, practice realization, practice verification. Happening all at once, all the time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But it's almost half past. Is there another question? I have a question, very selfish question. I'm looking over Brendan's shoulder, and I see what I think is a beautiful Irish harp. Is that right? Are you a harpist?
My girlfriend actually is.
Oh,
yeah,
wonderful.
I don't play it myself, but other members of the song I've asked, because this is kind of my sitting room.
Uh-huh.
But yes, it is a beautiful harp.
Look at that, gorgeous. Yes, I for years was aspired to play the harp, but never got beyond the Polly Wally Doodle stage. Too bad. Maybe next time.
Great fan of the harpist Joanna Newsom, who's sort of.
Oh yes.
Her songwriter harpist, and so that was her inspiration to take up the instrument herself.
Oh, marvelous, marvelous! Before the great upset that has just happened, I was thinking I might accompany one of our Sangha members to Ireland this summer, and he spends each July in Galway City, and not too far from Galway City is a harp maker, who a young man with his family. He's got a wife and two kids, and everybody works on these harps, and he has been able to retrieve a certain kind of wood that has been in the peat bogs for centuries and make harps out of them. They are absolutely extraordinary. So I thought, we'll just drop in and see him. But now I don't think that's going to happen. So
I don't play the harp. Yeah. I have been to Galway, so I'll have to go back someday and visit that shop. I did have a question, though,
yes.
For a little time.
Sure.
I was just wondering if you could just offer some thoughts on when the rat is really gnawing at the tree and the angst really wells up into, you know, truly afflicted emotions of sorrow and anger,
mm-hmm.
You know, self-hatred and indignation. I mean, how would you say that is one should approach that and settle oneself as this?
Well, it's rather like Dogen's poem, you know, cattails softly swaying in the breeze, is an image of this body-mind taking its place in the midst of what can feel like very strong wind. The wind is really blowing hard, and our experience of practice enables us to see that no matter how hard the wind is blowing, the cattail will bend over and then come back as the breeze lessens. And so we are invited to trust our practice so profoundly that no matter how hard the wind is blowing, we can actually take our seat, stretch out the back and lift the head and relax the shoulders and so forth, and just let the wind blow. Just let the wind blow. And if there are tears or anger or fear, whatever it is, let the wind blow. And what always happens is the wind dies down. Sooner or later, it dies down. And the more that we have that experience, the more we trust that whatever wind is blowing, it cannot blow us over. Or some say, well, yeah, and if it blows us over, you know, if we should fall down, as Suzuki Roshi would like to say, that spot of ground where you fell, that is where you stand up again. And practice is also about always standing up right on that spot. As Roshi would like to say, again, you don't fall down here and then get up over there. No, you get up right where you fell. And you, even if, you know, we have the experience of, oh, well, boy, just a few moments ago, I was so overwhelmed with grief, you know, I felt like I was completely drowning. And then I actually remembered I could straighten my back and sit still in the wind. By golly, I can. Look at that. And just let the wind blow. And then we start to understand that the nature of these, you know, these gusts of wind, these blasts of wind, these tornadoes, whatever they are, is actually ephemeral and constantly passing. And the more we practice that way, the less likely we are to mistake the nature of wind for something that's really gonna just, you know, shatter us completely, which it can't do.
Thank you.
Those are some thoughts anyway.
Thank you.
Okay, well, as I say, I can't see everyone's picture, but almost everyone's. And
I have a question, you know.
Yes, is that Millard?
It is.
Oh, hi.
Yes. And I understand that it's possible shopping on Amazon to have part of the proceeds go to your Hartford Zen Center. Is that correct?
Yes, I don't quite understand the mechanism entirely, Millard, but somebody did set up something like that.
Okay, I'll look into it and see what I can find out.
Yeah, something like as you make the purchase, you can check some box or something, and then we get, you know, 8 cents or something like that. Little bit helps.
I'll take a look.
Excuse me?
Yes?
But you would go to Amazon Smile?
That's it.
Your
account,
and then you look up the charity that you want to give to, and apparently Neil has an account, and the Dharma Center also has a Smile account.
So you can make a link there or something.
Yeah, you click on, it's one click. You're actually shopping diverted into something that gives that charity the credit.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyone who wants to do that is welcome, and it's much appreciated.
I have the understanding that's a one-time thing. Once you mention who you would like the donation to go to, all subsequent purchases.
I think that's right. Then there's a little skimming action that goes on. Yes, I think that's right.
You can change
Thank
it,
you.
Though.
Yes, you can change it, right.
I feel obliged to point out that I use that service and donate to a charity and have spent hundreds of dollars on Amazon, and I think the charity has received $7 over
$7.
The entire time of years of purchases on Amazon. So
yeah.
Just be aware that you could just send $7 to Hartford.
You could. Yeah, it helps if you have, if there are millions of people all checking the same box, but that doesn't appear to be happening, so, yeah. Okay, well, the little black cat is, I think, waiting for attention. Oh, is there another question?
And Dave has a question.
I can get more information on it because I know the guy that runs it. But it's a service, if you use, like you say, your debit card all the time or whatever, every purchase rounds up, and gives, to the cause of your choice. And you,
great.
Anything,
okay.
From what I understand.
Well, let me say,
go grocery shopping, buy gas, anything, it would go to where you deem it to go.
Excellent, thank you. And as I say, every little bit helps, so even $7.
The last point I might want to mention is an organization in New York. I think it's the library has put out an album, and the album is a recording of normal New York City life street sounds.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah. Well, a lot of the street sounds are returning to San Francisco pretty quickly, so. And they were gone long enough for me to get attached to how quiet everything was. And I remember 3 weeks ago now, going out on the back porch early in the morning and inhaling and feeling like, oh my God, it's like Tassajara. The air is perfectly clear and fresh. So, and as Bob Thurman pointed out, you see, we can do it. We can do this. Of course, it didn't last all that long, but.
I just wanted to mention that I think it was Thursday in the governor's speech, he mentioned Zen mind, beginner's mind.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah,
just I got like a little... former governor, long
got
ago.
Kick out of that.
Okay, well, maybe
thank
that's,
you so much,
that's good. Thank you guys. It was great to see you all, and please take care of yourselves and one another. And we'll do this again sometime.
Okay.
Okay. Does the engineer want to take over now?
Shall we chant out?
Yes.
And would you lead that, Mio?
Yes, I will.